You are listening to Season 1, Episode 8. Stay tuned as we cover Part 7 of Chapter 1, Distortion of Miracle Impulses. Welcome, Miracle Makers. This is Angie, your host of Singularity, a podcast where we will journey together through various sacred and inspired texts, remembering our truths along the way. Thank you for being a part of my journey and for allowing me to be a part of yours. Go ahead and grab your coffee. Have your pen and paper handy and the text if you have it. Here we go. In this episode, we're covering part 7 of chapter 1, Distortions of Miracle Impulses. And if you're like me, you're thinking, what in the world is miracle impulses? Well, as I went through this text and I've broken it down, what I've come up with is a word replacement to help us. And as I go through the text, we'll make more sense of it. But the word I came up with is senses, like our five senses.
Did you know there's a world of miracles inside our bodies? For example, your eyes can see 10 million shades of color. Sometimes all you need to do is look up. We can hear thousands of sounds, from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. Our bodies can withstand temperatures around 60 degrees centigrade. Our tongues can differentiate 100,000 different tastes. Our noses can distinguish more than a trillion scents. Knowing each one of them, that's the tough part. Get out there. Explore. See. Smell. Hear. Taste. Touch. Widen your world.
Distortions of miracle impulses. Paragraph 1, perceiving pleasure. In the last episode, we talked about the mind and that when it thinks that it is a body, it has a choice to express itself. And when it does this, the body becomes basically an expression of thought. We are in the image of our Creator as co-creators. In Genesis 1:27, it says, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him." I love it when sacred texts cross-reference each other, so I always like to throw in them. I like to throw them in when I see them. So yeah, as we imagine it possible, we create it, and we believe our creations are real. We have also learned or have been reminded that we are different from our Creator and that the mind has the choice to express itself in the world from a mindset of love or loveless, to where our Creator has no choice because he is only love. In this part of chapter 1, it takes this concept a little bit further, and that from the expression that we create this world, we are able to perceive it. We talk a lot more about perception here. We see either or perceive a world that is false that we created and now believe to be real, or we can remember our true love beast world. Perception is done through the senses, so each person has sense organs that take in information from the environment and sends it to our awareness. Our awareness, whether it's love-based or loveless, then processes that information through the filter of our choosing, which then tells us how to respond. When we choose love-based expression, we can sense our world with miracle impulses. Just the same as we express ourselves from the loveless, we are sensing it with our physical impulses. Physical impulses are when we use our senses like touch, sight, smell, taste, feel to perceive the world from the loveless mindset. From here, all senses are experienced from lack, causing perceived highs and lows. So it's giving the illusion of pleasure or pain, joy or sorrow, love and fear. Because when we see, smell, touch, taste, feel something from a place of lacking, we're perceiving an extreme high or an extreme low. The text is telling us here, though, that pleasure is constant and it never increases or decreases. It's abundant. It is always there. We are the ones that actually are moving in and out from it. The idea that we can be separate from it or lacking it, allows a perception of going from extreme lows to sudden highs, sending a rush as it rises and falls. The ego craves this. It will experience these perceived lows so that the pleasure can feel earned, giving the guilt the okay to accept the pleasure. Ego gets very uncomfortable in the silence that comes with the peace and the balance of pleasure. So it divides itself away from the center, believing that it is separate, only to spend the entirety of its existing exerting large amounts of effort, reaching for the center. Ego is freed when we get comfortable in the silence, because the silence exposes ego for the lie that it is. Miracle impulses are when our physical bodies experience our physical world through our senses from the mindset of love, which then keeps us in complete alignment and communion with God's will. The text reads that all real pleasure comes from doing God's will. So I've put a lot of thought this week into what that is. What is God's will? I've even asked around a few people what they thought or what their definition could be of what God's will is. And of course, it's not necessarily what God's will is for them specifically or for me specifically that I'm asking. It's more along the concept of the idea of what is God's will in general. So what I came up with through meditation, and you can call it prayer, and through reading this section, I came up with this definition that I want to share with you. And as always, take only what is truth for you. To break it down, I simply stated it as essentially a code of conduct for spirit. So animals follow this code of conduct. Plants follow this code of conduct. Even galaxies follow this code of conduct. So what I've taken is a definition of a code of conduct and applied it here. So God's will could be said as a directional pull held in place by a set of rules, outlining the norms, rules, responsibilities, practices for the whole through the individual, set in place to establish a set standard or balance so that it is known what is expected to perpetuate the initial directional pull that is God's will, the whole of creation. Paragraph 2, the body's only true purpose. I found an old analogy going through some of my notes when I was going through the course in the past, and I want to share it with you today. I think it can still apply. It is to be the spacesuit worn by spirit to work outside of the space or perceive nothing, creating a barrier or home or mansion to close off or make specific our portion of the whole, which is spirit. John 14:2 says, "In my Father's house are many mansions." There could be a new meaning had here that my Father's house could be perceived as the whole, and the many mansions is everything that makes up the whole. We are the conduit for the love or information that creates and makes from this perceived nothing, interpreting and creating it into the perceived physical. Same in reverse, when we translate what is going on in the physical or perceived physical to the perceived nothing, we are an important part of the system and how it stays in balance and how it all works together, but we get sidetracked from our purpose in thinking we are an individual with highs and lows to worry about and not the flow of the bigger system that keeps everything going, including ourselves. Being in this state that is neither full spirit or full physical means our purpose is to merge the two into balance. It is easy for us to be pulled into one direction more than the other. When both are in vibrational harmony, the result is the physical body housing the spirit within. Genesis 2:7 says, "Then the Lord God formed man of the dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living being." Because we are neither here nor there, our vision is not either. It is up to us to feel within ourselves from this place of remembering, so that not physical sight per se, but eyes closed remembering a feeling sort of sight. From that place of sight or feeling, do all things and express yourself from one body to another through creating. The purpose of the body is to create, which is the language of the universe. The more we see from this place, the more clear our true sight will become. True sight is when we perceive from the love mindset with the lens of pure truth, using it simultaneously with our senses. Paragraph 3. Fantasies. Fantasies are when we take the information gathered by the senses and bring them into our awareness and filter the stimuli through a mindset of lack or separateness. Our separateness becomes twisted to that of unreality. In the perceived lack, we forget that abundance is already ours and we go outside of ourselves to seek what we think that we do not have. So as a result, we are on the hunt for the pleasure we believe comes from satisfying a need or a lack. But what is really happening in that moment is that we are reunited with our remembering that it was always ours. So choosing to forget that real pleasure is readily available and always ours, we create further lack and force abundance instead. We know at a spirit level that what we need is not really lost, but there is just some sort of satisfaction that the ego gets from the hide and seek of it all. The text tells us that we do not know what we are doing when we act out from this place of need and the desire to fulfill these perceived lacks. We are acting from a place of fear. Like a person who is drowning, lifeguards are trained to come up behind a person who is drowning for this very reason, because if they approach within sight, the individual who is drowning while in this state of fear will actually grab on and pull at the lifeguard, bringing them both under. We are panic-stricken in our perceived lack, grabbing onto anything and everything we can to fill this lack, even at the expense of ourselves, our environment, and others. When we believe that we are separate, the power that is rightfully ours is forced from us. We become a slave to the fantasy or the illusion that we are powerless, in need, and alone. The workbook lessons this week are pushing home the idea that all minds are joined and that all thoughts are connected in the creating of the world we see. Text tells us here, as long as there is even one slave to these thoughts, that none of us can be fully released. There is power given to us in this thought too. So our goal as co-creators and miracle makers is to restore the wholeness within ourselves. In escaping fear, we make our way on the path to our truth. Doing this, we make the way clear for the next. And to quote Marianne Williamson once more, as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we're liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Paragraph 4, mind training. We can't just know this stuff, we have to do it. So it is important for us to utilize the workbook section of the course. They are there to ease us into the mindset that is needed to act out on these beliefs. We must train our minds, become disciplined in our thoughts, creating from an intentional place of love, because the distortion is perceived real. It is so easy for us to confuse the impulses we perceive as physical and forgetting the miracle. This type of mindset takes some training to undo the old beliefs. Our role in the atonement is realizing our truth and training our minds to stay in balance so that we open the idea for the next to do the same. As we go through the Course in Miracles, and as I've mentioned before and will probably remind myself again, that it will continue to build on itself, creating a sort of mental endurance, so that when we are at our full potential, we do not confuse the awe we experience in this process as fear. Awe is meant to bring on an intense feeling of bliss, not fear. For some people, a roller coaster ride can be an intense feeling of joy, but for the unprepared or already fearful, it can be terrifying. So the course is preparing us as it is also aiding us in taking back our power, changing our mindsets from fear-based to love. In conclusion, the will of God or love is the pulse of creation. This is our pulse too. The breath of life was breathed into us. We carry this pulse in our hearts as our heartbeat. To go against the flow is like swimming upstream. We will exhaust very quickly. Remember, too, that nothing can pass into our awareness without our acceptance of it on some level first. We are in control and have an awareness moment each time something new becomes a belief or we reinforce an already existing one. By becoming aware of the subtle, we can notice these moments and be more conscious and cautious in the choosing. This concludes the text portion of this episode. Welcome to part 2 of episode 8. We will be reviewing the workbook lessons 16 through 20. Lesson 16. I have no neutral thoughts. The idea for this lesson is to dispel the belief that our thoughts have no effect. All thoughts contribute to truth or the illusion. Everything we see is because we thought it into existence. Thoughts are not big or small, powerful or weak. They are either true or false. It can only be one or the other. Both of them create their own likeness. Neutral thoughts are not even possible. Every thought that we have will bring either love or fear. Each thought we have adds to the making of the false world or it leads to the real one. And we know what thoughts we are having based on the world that we are seeing. Quoting the workbook section here, it says, "The world I see arises from my thinking errors. So will the real world rise before my eyes as I let my errors be corrected." The lessons have been telling us that our false thoughts mean nothing. Lesson 16 tells us here that you can indeed multiply nothing, but you will not extend it by doing so. So you can multiply zero indefinitely, but it will always result in zero or nothing. 17. I see no neutral thoughts. The idea for this lesson is identifying cause and effect as it really operates in the world. We see no neutral thoughts. Thoughts cannot be without effects because none of the thoughts that we are having are neutral. All thoughts have power. There is power in this responsibility and that our minds can change. So this means too that the world we see can too. What we see is a result of our thoughts. So the world is because we thought it, not the other way around. If it were the other way around, then what we perceived or picked up with our senses would be what creates it. This is highly unlikely because perception and how we all experience things is incredibly variable. Life is thought. If we did not think, we would not exist. 18. I am not alone in experiencing the effects of my seeing. The idea of this lesson is two parts. One, thoughts giving rise to what we see are never neutral or unimportant. And the second concept of the lesson here is all minds are joined. The focus on this lesson is on how we see, more than what we see. This is a simple but big statement. It sums up the last two lessons. It isn't what we are perceiving, it is how we are perceiving. Because the outcome of our thoughts, the world we perceive, is made from the place we project ourselves from or create from. Am I creating from love? Each thought that I am having, is it a love-based thought or loveless? In escaping from the darkness, we learn that darkness is essentially ignorance, a perceived lack of knowledge, the knowledge that we are spirit and spirit is truth. In truth, we are willing to hide nothing, and in doing this, we are in communion. When we are in communion or plugged into the universal consciousness, all minds are joined. There is nothing we feel we need to hide because we know nothing is ever really hidden. So there are no private thoughts when we are in the real world. Even this idea of separateness was in fact a shared idea before it could form, albeit a sharing of nothing or no thing. Since this is possible, then we can also call all our real thoughts and share everything with everyone. Because of this, my thoughts of separation or loveless thoughts call upon the separation and loveless thoughts of others, just the same as the real and love thoughts awaken real and love thoughts in them. Just as each thought of division, segregation, and hate was passed down from generations before us, so was every thought of togetherness, hope, peace, and love. So know that each time that you have a love thought, you are giving it to not only yourself, but to everyone and everything. 19. I am not alone in experiencing the effects of my thoughts. The idea in this lesson is also two-parted. One, the reason why our seeing does not affect us alone, and two, why all minds are joined. It's not easy to accept this because with it comes this huge feeling of responsibility. And the other thing is that we can regard it as an invasion of privacy. I recently wrote a piece that I want to share with you, a guided mind trip, as I would like to call it, I guess. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to interfere with the process. So if you would take a listen and close your eyes. I want you to imagine for me a child in your life that you love. It can be your own, a niece, a nephew, or any sweet child that has made their way into your heart. I'm going to ask you to hold that love there as you imagine them as they form in the womb, as if looking under a microscope. See as just the two simple tiny cells rapidly divide and multiply right in front of your eyes. As you watch them forming and fast forward, you start to recognize the delicate, tiny features of these cells start to form into the nose, toes, and ears of the sweet child that you love so much. Now imagine yourself as one of these trillions of cells. See yourself pop up there, residing on the tip of the nose as you are now a part of them, waiting with them in the womb, hours before making their entrance into this world. Now look out from yourself out into the world inside the womb, examining the environment that has offered safekeeping for this child that has your heart. Look at it critically as you would any environment you would bring this child into. Feel yourself filled with concern that it is perfect. Look around you now at the other cells you see. Imagine them as loved ones, family, and friends. As you look out further, you can even see your mailman hanging around the bridge of this cute little nose. Notice yourself filling with joy as you feel the love that you have for each of them. Now feel yourself becoming aware of the cells that you can't see. Imagine those cells as people that you may never see or meet. Those people who collectively are making up the cells of the heart of this child. Become aware now of your love growing as your care deepens naturally for them, and that they are all taken care of and being loved. If only for the purpose they serve, but also because they are a part of something you love and that you are also a part of. Suddenly you become aware that without each and every cell or person that exists or the health of the environment surrounding this child at this critical stage is vital to its survival, and now that you are also a part of. Feel that sense of selfless responsibility rise within you. Now from this place of love, connectedness, and selflessness, I want you to think on this. That this way of thinking allows for us to go around ego and allows ourselves to really selflessly love ourselves and motivate change in every action and thought that comes from us. If we thought of ourselves, others, and this world from this place of love, giving ourselves, others, and this world this selflessness in every way from this unconditional place of incredible love, recognizing our wholeness, knowing we are not only an individual cell, but that we are a part of a miraculous system made up of many that makes up a precious life forming to be born. When we get ourselves in the mindset of selflessness and love ourselves, the earth and the people in it, from this place it opens up this incredible feeling of connectedness. It pulls from us the courage to want to do our part in making it better, not just for everyone else, but for ourselves. The lessons are showing us that. There are no private thoughts. This makes salvation possible. And remembering that salvation isn't about saving your soul, it's about saving your mind. And witnessing, not to save the soul of your neighbor, but through getting your mindset right and adding the shared mind of getting all of us there. Salvation is possible because it is the will of God. The will of God is that we all turn our minds over to true authority, or that our minds serve true authority. In this mindset, we are all set free. 20. I am determined to see. The idea for this episode is the course's first attempt to introduce structure and the reversal of our thinking in a way that will not be misconstrued as forcing or pressure. Reversal of our thinking is critical. It's salvation. The salvation of the world depends on each of us making our own salvation our primary focus. Because in saving our mindset, we do our part in the complete restoration of the whole. We cannot see if we feel coerced or forced, or if we give into resentment and coercion. This is not to force or pressure. Our minds are undisciplined, unpracticed, so we are learning with practice to see the difference between joy and sorrow, pleasure and pain, love and fear. Vision's only requirement is that you want to see and decide to see. In your determination to see, you will. Real law of cause and effect. What you desire, you will see. This will allow for us to see that our will and the will of God are one. As we become more aware of the overstimulation from all of this pointless stimuli, we must find ourselves and shift our focus back in toward our stillness. And not just be in the stillness, but be of the stillness. It is here where real shifts begin to happen. With your coffee still warm and your notes fresh, take this time now to go inward. Aligning yourself with your truth, take it with you into the week. Until next time, keep shining.